Kaboom! Mackenzie, what is the most badass stunt you've ever done?
Oh, I'm so distracted by the kaboom. I feel like I completely lost it.
That might be the most badass intro we've ever done.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I feel like we could have gotten a sound effect, though. I'm just for future reference, we can download some sound effects if we need some fun ones. But no, let's see. What is the coolest stunt I've ever done? I mean, obviously, I've never done real stunts the way these people have done. But I would say I've done a couple things that I think are pretty cool. When I was young, I had a BMX bike and I had like a big BMX helmet. And I didn't compete officially by any means, but we had one of those, you know, those like drainage, concrete drainage things.
They always use those in action movies. It's in like every action car chase. Yeah.
What? Yeah, exactly. So we had one of those in our neighborhood that was pretty big and also had some like weird obstacles in it because it had the, I don't know, pipes. You know, okay. That were also covered in concrete. Anyway, so we would just do like crazy tricks off that thing and it got pretty gnarly. And this is maybe the first time my mom's hearing this. And thank God, because this was post accident and I wasn't supposed to be doing any of that. And I def was doing a lot of that and doing crazy tricks. And I will say when I was doing that, I would wear my helmet, but I was so embarrassed by my big BMX helmet anywhere else. I like would sometimes not wear it. So yeah,
you got to get back on the horse. So
you got to get back on the horse. I 6 months after my accident was back on the horse, for the record. It was the first thing I asked for after my accident. I was like, I would want a new bike because obviously that one was broken. So yeah, that was the biggest one. I think stunts that I actually did that would be considered stunts, but I've also rented out a car track for my old car that I had and raced against myself against times with a bunch of friends.
Oh, okay. With a bunch of friends. This sounded like you just rented the track.
You can just rent it for yourself, but you do rent like that. No. I'm not about that life. No, there were like four of us and we each brought our various sports cars and just raced our cars around the track, which was really fun. It wasn't like
it's pretty
terrifying,
badass.
But it was fun. Yeah. It was super fun. What about you?
Well, I've been skydiving before, which is awesome. Jealous. There's no experience like it. So if you've never been skydiving, it's incredible.
If you could sum it up in one word, what would you do? Go.
Unique. I think that's the word for it. Is just there's a lot of other experiences. Whitewater rafting I've done. Mm-hmm. I haven't actually done bungee jumping, but I would imagine that's very similar to a couple other
bungee things. Jumping is pretty cool. It's not, I mean, I haven't done skydiving, but I imagine it feels a lot safer than that because you're tethered to something,
but
you know,
flying towards the earth, just falling until the chute pulls. There's just nothing like it. So I think unique is the best word for it.
Yeah.
So that, and then my thing, and I'm not encouraging anyone to do this, but in college, I had a knack for getting drunk and then jumping off high things into water. That was thrilling to me, and it was a mistake. Don't recommend it. Have you ever seen the movie A Beautiful Mind, Russell Crowe? So in that, he goes to a party. Spoilers, he goes to a party, and he's outside tracing the stars with, I forget who the actress is in that, but he's tracing the stars for her. That scene was filmed at my college, Fairleigh Dickinson University. Mm. And the fountain that is behind them in that scene, we used to get drunk swim in that fountain. So every time that movie's on, I can point out and be like, I swam in that fountain. But it's designed with sort of like a top, like a bowl at the top, about like 8 feet off the ground or so. And so we would climb up into that bowl. And then we started a trend of jumping out into the bottom level. So it was about like an 8 to 10 foot drop, but you only had probably 4 feet between like the two slabs of concrete to land in the water. And the water was only about 3.5 feet deep. So
oh my God.
Not my smartest thing. I mean, we did it multiple times, but what are you going to do? We were young and stupid and drunk. So
I'm also 0% surprised by the story. I mean, other than the Beautiful Mind fountain being involved, I'm not at all surprised by the actual antics.
I had to make it movie related to get you like, oh, wow, this is culturally significant.
Yes. I think you should stick with the whitewater rafting, by the way. And I love whitewater rafting, plus one on that. But yeah, maybe no more drunken jumps.
I think I'm about to turn 40 this month. So we're going to stick with simple.
Y'all listeners, this is a drinking game for the month of August. In case you weren't aware, every time that Lamar says it's his birthday this month, we're taking a drink. So I'm going to be really drunk by the end of this pod.
Done. Oh, happy birthday, me. Drink again.
Happy birthday, you. All right, let's get rolling. Welcome back to We Drink and We Watch Things. I'm Mackenzie.
I'm Lamar.
And we are kicking off a new month here on the pod. And this one is still kind of summery related, but it's very specific. We're going to be talking about summer blockbusters, which is a different animal, I think, overall.
And specifically 2024 summer blockbusters.
Yes.
Like stuff that has come out this year.
Yeah, these summer blockbusters are all from summer 2024, and we have watched a lot of them and downloaded them into our brains, and we were not allowed to take notes, so bear with us. But
I
anyway.
Did the opposite. I did not download it to my brain, and I'm very worried that I'm not going to remember a fucking thing about this movie today, so you're going to have to carry this episode.
That's okay, because I fucking love this movie, which is The Fall Guy. I have actually seen it three times. Count it, three times already. So
yeah, you're gonna carry this episode. Also, The Fall Guy 2024, not to be confused with The Fall Guy 1930, Fall Guy 1947, Fall Guy 1982, Fall Guy 2018, Fall Guy 2023, and partially related to, which I'm sure we'll get to, The Fall Guy TV series from 81 to 86. But
which
Jesus, I was looking through the different plots of these, and it's
you like Googled The Fall Guy, and you were like on the wrong
which
plot.
One are
you're
we
like,
doing
what is happening?
The 2024 blockbuster film, Fall Guy 1930, it's back. Put it back in theaters.
It is an homage to a lot of things, so it kind of makes sense. But anyways, before we get into all that, which yes, we will do a deep dive, what are we drinking?
We are drinking a drink made by Skyler at Craft World with no vowels, C-R-F-T-W-R-L-D. And he's designed this drink that is very peachy and very sweet, but it's peach whiskey, peach puree, a little bit of simple, and lemon. And it is makes your mouth pucker for sure.
I was going to say, he designed it for you. Let's be honest.
That's
he was like,
exactly.
these cocktails well. Are built around Lamar's cocktail collection, just for the record, in case y'all were aware, insofar as I had to scramble for things that I don't have. So, but it is still good. So
yeah,
cheers to that.
I was cursed with only having one of the four types of taste buds. I only have sweet. So Skylar knows what I like. And
he does.
Cheers.
Cheers. I have to call out my glass this week also while we're here, because for two reasons. One, it's nostalgic because it was my grandfather's like little lowball glasses. He was not a big drinker and these literally never got used, but they were like on display in his cabinet my entire life. And I never looked that closely at them. And he was not a movie guy. I don't understand. Like, he kind of hated movies actually. And this is like a movie homage glass.
It's, yeah, it's got like a cinema reel. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's a little cinema reel.
Looks like
and it's
our opening
got
credits.
Exactly.
Anyone's seen our animation, yeah.
And it's Charlie Chaplin, John Barrymore, Clara Bow. Like, it's got some great legendary actors and actresses on this. And because this film is like such an homage to movie making in a number of ways, I thought it would be an appropriate glass for today.
Cool. We also didn't say the name of the drink. Do you want to say that?
Oh, yeah. This one I think is fun. Stuntin'. Stunting. I feel like when I like, so Skylar texted this to me because, you know, you text your partner instead of talking to them in real life. And he sent it to me. He was like, what about? And it was like this separate text and he had sent all these ideas. And I was like, no, no, because I'm a monster. And then he sent the next one and it was
bad,
just
garbage. Next.
Crap. Move on. No. Yeah. And then he sent stunting. And I was like, that's it. That's the one. I liked it. And if you didn't know, this movie is all about stunts and stunt doubles, and we'll get into all that. So hence the name. I think
Hell
it's
yeah.
Alrighty. Well, getting into it. Don't worry, guys. We know this is a new release. So we're going to be going back to some of our basics of giving you the high level deets at the top, spoiler free, couple little nuggets, give you our ratings before we get into it, and we will warn you before we get into it. So that's as much a reminder for me as it is for y'all, because we haven't done that in a minute, so hopefully we don't fuck it up. But want to get into some of the basics. Like we said, this is from this year, but the ratings are really good on this. I do think it's like a little bit different between IMDb to Rotten Tomatoes, which was kind of interesting to me. So IMDb is 6.9 out of 10. And then the critics have this at 82% on Rotten Tomatoes, and the audience has it at 86%. So
yeah, pretty close.
Pretty close on the Rotten Tomato side. But yeah, the IMDb is usually not that different, I feel like. I don't know. Maybe that adjusts over time since it's newer. Who knows?
And I think this is what you usually do next. But box office wise, did this didn't do great, or am I misremembering?
It did okay. Yeah. It made its budget back and then some, but yeah, it didn't do as awesome as anticipated. So it was $125 million budget and it made $178. Okay. But again, I think it went, so it was a, I want to say it was Amazon Prime partnership or something like that. So it went to Amazon Prime pretty quickly, like as far as being able to rent it or whatever on there. I don't remember. Don't hold me to that. But I thought it was that it went to streaming pretty quickly. And that's, I don't know if that was because it performed poorly or if it was already part of the plan. Because sometimes it is.
It's kind of, yeah, it goes both ways now because I honestly, I know you have Alamo Draft Pass because you go to the movies a ton, but my current philosophy is that since COVID, usually films are streaming within a few months of coming out. So
yeah,
if I miss something, I don't feel bad about it because I'm not waiting 6 to 8 months to see it. So I don't feel as obligated to see stuff like this in theaters. I kind of wish I had because it is visually a really cool film.
I was going to say, I do think this is one of those, though, that I would have felt bad about missing in theaters because it is an action flick and it's so stunt oriented, obviously. Like, I just think the experience in theaters is really fun. But I agree with you. There's been, like, you know, rom-coms and stuff that I'm like, I don't really care. Yeah. I'll watch it when it comes out later. But if it's anything actiony, I try to see it on a big screen. Like, that's what it was made for.
Exactly.
So
yeah,
this is very much like that. It's a really fun experience in the theaters. I know you watched it after the fact, but I still think it's a fun watch at home too. Yeah. So, but we'll get into some basics really quick. Like we said, so the director here is David Leitch, who, fun fact, started his career as a stuntman for none other than Brad Pitt. And he has gone on to make movies with Brad Pitt. So one of the first ones I wanted to call out is he did Bullet Train, directed Bullet Train, where Brad Pitt is the lead. Aaron Taylor Johnson's also in it, a couple things like that.
Which, but that was like a sleeper. That was,
I fucking loved that movie.
Yeah, I didn't have any desire to see it when the trailers came out. It gave me big time Guy Ritchie, Quentin Tarantino, zany cast of characters, kind of a heist film mixed with like a gangster film. And that, you would think that would just hook me, but even the trailers didn't do as much.
I was like, what is wrong with everything you just said?
Well, that's what I mean, is it's weird that I wasn't going to go see it. And then I heard, I think after opening weekend, a few people said, have you seen Bullet Train? It's so fucking good.
It was
good. I went and saw it, and then I wouldn't shut up about how great it is. So watch Bullet Train if you haven't.
Are you a diesel? Okay. Anyway, we're moving on. No, it's so good. If you haven't seen it, then you need to see it and you'll get that reference. But it's super fun. And I agree. I think it's kind of a sleeper. Like, people didn't really expect it. I don't know why. I agree with you. It seems like it should have hooked everybody. But anyways, it's on Netflix. Go watch it. He also did John Wick. He co-directed John Wick, I should say. He also did Atomic Blonde, which is actually a few years older than I thought he was directing. And that's a fun one. I haven't seen it in a minute, but I remember really liking it when it came out. Deadpool 2, Fast and the Furious, Hobbs and Shaw. And my favorite fun fact is he did the music video for Celine Dion's Ashes.
Oh my goodness. If this guy wasn't a legend already in my mind, he is now.
He is now. Listen to all this action and beautiful stunt work this man has done. And then he's got a pepper in a little, you know, he's like, you know who I love? Celine Dion. Like, let's do a Celine Dion video. I just thought that was fucking hilarious. Anyway, writers. So this is based on, you mentioned it already, the TV series that this is based on was called The Fall Guy, and that was in the 80s, and that was created by Glenn A. Larson, I'm sorry. And he's actually created a ton of movies, or a ton of TV series that movies were later based on. This is like his shtick, interestingly enough.
Yeah.
But this is based off of him, and then it was written, this particular screenplay was written by Drew Pearce, who's done a lot of stuff that you probably know, like Iron Man 3, Mission Impossible, Rogue Nation. He also did Hobbs and Shaw. And you'll hear that. There's a lot of overlap. These people have worked on multiple things together, is the point.
Yeah, when you look at their list of credits, it just makes total sense how these folks would write a movie about stuntmen between all the action stuff.
Yep.
And like you said, all the old TV shows. He did Glenn did Knight Rider and Magnum P.I.
Yep.
It's very clearly leading them toward this final sort of meta picture that they made.
It's so meta. That's such a great call out. And it's this culmination, yes, of all these experiences. I totally agree. So let's blow through the cast and crew. Really awesome cast here. But, you know, we kind of focus, obviously, on Ryan Gosling 99.9% of the time.
You have to focus on Ryan Gosling anytime he's on screen. He's so fucking beautiful.
He's just gorgeous. He just distracts you from everything that's happening. But obviously, he's done Barbie, Drive, Place Beyond the Pines, La La Land, Blade Runner 2049, The Notebook, The Nice Guys. Like, he's done a bazillion things. And I say all those different ones because what a range. You know, there are some very different films in that list. He can do rom-com. He can do musical. He can do action. He can be funny. Like, it's no wonder he can
do
it all.
Do you have a favorite, I guess, two-part question. Do you have a favorite Ryan Gosling film that he's in? And then do you have a favorite performance of his?
Those might be the same, actually. That's a good question. I think it's La La Land for me because he learned all the parts. Like, he was obviously he was on Mickey Mouse Club. He sang and danced and did all these things. But he had to learn piano for La La Land. And he played all those parts. And I also just thought the performance was beautiful. And I think it's a really beautiful story. It was a contender for Best Picture. Anyway, I think he does a really, really great job in that.
So you're going with both La La Land?
I think so. What about you?
I would probably say, and part of me wants to say Remember the Titans is my favorite movie he's in, but he has such a small part in that. It was one of his earlier roles he was playing. But I would probably say Nice Guys for my favorite movie that he's in.
Oh my God, I love The Nice Guys.
So good, front to back. And that's another one that's very similar to this. It's met in a way. It's set within a, I almost said cinematic universe. Marvel would sue the shit out of us for saying that. But it's set within a universe where they're
like,
making movies.
Say that.
Yeah,
don't
it's a
sue
movie
us.
About a movie kind of thing. So probably that one. And then favorite performance, honestly, was probably Ken in the Barbie film. I think we talked
he
during
really
Barbie how Ken got a lot of the attention. But I think it's part of it is because Ryan Gosling just has an incredible performance in that. Not to detract away from all the other great stuff happening in that film. But again, it's hard to not acknowledge how good he was in that movie.
He was really good. And he was just funny. You know, I think he was just really funny in that one, which is hard to do sometimes. But yeah, I think I can't pick that one because of all the other performances. But yes, I agree. I think he did an awesome job. So anyway, we love Ryan Gosling on the pod. End of story. Emily Blunt, obviously another fucking gem of a human with incredible range. So she did Devil Wears Prada, Oppenheimer, which obviously we've done. Pain Hustlers recently, where she plays a very different character. The Adjustment Bureau, which is a great movie if you haven't seen it, based on a short story. She did A Quiet Place with her husband, John Krasinski. She did Mary Poppins Returns, because this bitch can also sing. She did Salmon Fishing in the Yemen, where she plays a really funny nerd lady. Anyway,
she
can do
Edge
anything
of Tomorrow,
as well.
Too. And I Edge of Tomorrow, was looking at her list of roles and a bunch that you just named. And I love how she is. She's beautiful. She's gorgeous. But she is so capable of playing tough, no-nonsense roles, whether it be A Quiet Place, Edge of Tomorrow. Like, she can play this straight, serious, strong female character. But in this, I love how she adds some levity to it. And she's very independent and strong, but she has this humor in this that I really appreciated.
Yeah, I think she has such a unique presence that she brings to every role. And I actually like, fun fact about this role, she plays a director that is, again, very meta. She's the director of this film from being a camera operator to start. But she was originally written as a makeup artist in the original version of the script. And they rewrote it to make her this director person. And I feel like that's got to be part of the Emily Blunt factor of, like, she can do so much more than that. And she's going to make this character so much more interesting. Nothing against makeup artists. I'm not saying that. It's a critical part of the filmmaking process. But her being a strong character leader who could, who could in theory pull off directing an entire film, right? So
yeah, I wanted to clarify. I'm not saying that, because she's attractive, she shouldn't be able to play the strong role. What I'm saying is that it would be easy for someone who looks like her to just play romantic interests in every film and always do rom-coms, but she takes on these roles and is able to play these strong female protagonists, which I dig.
Yeah, I mean, I love her in Devil Wears Prada. She's like a real prig that whole time, and it's hilarious. Like, I do this to people all the time based on that movie. She's like, I'm hearing this, and I want to hear this. And like, she's just so snarky and fun. I love her. She's awesome.
If she was born like 20 years earlier, I could have seen her as Sarah Connor in T2
Terminator, you know? Yeah, that's a very Edge of Tomorrow comparison. I agree. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really good. Hannah Waddingham. Of Ted Lasso fame, if you haven't seen it, which is like, anybody? Has anybody not seen it yet?
And if you haven't seen it, shame.
Shame.
Shame. Shame. Because she was also
Septa. Yeah. Yeah. She was Game of Thrones Septa, which is so funny that, like, I don't think nobody knew that out of the gate. You, of course, found that out after she was in Ted Lasso, and they're so different that you're like, really? She also has done a ton of musical theater over her career in the West End and London. I don't remember if she's made her Broadway debut, but she's done a ton of musical theater. And she's also in Sex Education, which was a very successful TV series on Netflix as well. So she's just, she can play anything too. This is
and
a killer
cast. She's turning 50 this year, or just turned 50.
She just turned 50, and she looks like a Greek goddess. Like, are you fucking kidding me? How is she?
You
want to
talk about empowering people, especially her role in Ted Lasso. She she makes me feel more confident watching her do her thing.
Yeah, you just, I want to grow up to be her in Ted Lasso for sure. Yeah. Aaron Taylor Johnson, who is, again, overlap with some work that they've done here before. So, like, he was in Bullet Train as well. He was in Avengers as Quicksilver, if you remember, like, Age of Ultron and some of that. He was in The Kingsman and Kick-Ass, I think, is the thing he's the most well-known for.
But sort of his
Yeah, that was his breakout. I actually haven't seen that. So
really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
If we ever do an action movie month, that should get added to the list.
I feel like I mean, I haven't watched the trailer for it in a minute, but I feel like when the trailer came out, I was like, ugh, I will hate this. I don't know if that's true. I don't think ages ago.
I think you would enjoy it. It's pretty clever.
Okay. Well, anyway, we'll watch that. And then he was in Tenet as well. So he's done a lot of great stuff. Teresa Palmer, who is kind of a more of a, like a TV actress. She hasn't been in a ton of things. She's most recently in like Discovery of Witches, which I watched for a little bit, but didn't love actually. She was in The Choice, which is like a cheesy rom-com. She was in Warm Bodies, a few little things like that. And she doesn't have a huge role here, but her
I don't remember who she is.
She's the girlfriend of Tom Ryder. And the co-star.
Okay.
Yeah. She doesn't even look like herself in this. Like, it took me a while to recognize her because I have seen those other things. And I was like, wait, that's her? Anyway, but yeah, she's not in here for very long, but she's in here for a couple moments, including a big fight scene with Ryan Reynolds. So we have also Stephanie Hsu, who was in Everything Everywhere All at Once, which if you haven't seen that, is fucking awesome. She plays a really cool character in that. She also plays a really different character, but equally interesting, I think, in a TV series called Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. She does a really good job. And I didn't recognize a ton of other things that she was in. Did you, anything else ring a bell with you?
No, I didn't dig into hers too much. I mean, she's one of those people who I've seen her in different things, but I didn't remember specifically from what.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And she's, cause she's done a lot of like small TV roles.
Oh, she was in Shang-Chi, which I liked. I don't remember who she was in that, but.
Okay. And then finally, Winston Duke of Black Panther and Us fame, who we've talked about a couple of times. And
I'm glad we didn't
great.
Have to go too long without talking about Winston Duke again.
I know. We got to bring him up. He's a gem in this, too. Like, I love his character. He's pretty fun. And he is one of my favorite lines that we'll get to. So no spoilers. And then the score is done. I actually love the music on this film in general. Like the soundtrack. They had a couple covers done.
The soundtrack and score is done entirely by Kiss. Is what I learned watching Kiss in every
yes
iteration.
And no. It's covers of Kiss, yes. And it's done by Dominic Lewis, who like does the score underlay as well. So it's a really fun one. And he did, again, Bullet Train, Kingsman, like a lot of overlap here. So very quick summary. One of the shortest we've had, which I actually think is funny, is a down and out stuntman must find the missing star of his ex-girlfriend's blockbuster film.
The end. Like,
so simple. Accurate, really, really concise.
But I think that's like perfect for a film that is meant to be meta. And there's parts where if you overthink it, this movie doesn't make sense. Like it's meant to be that where you can just dumb it down to that little sentence. And that totally speaks to the plot.
It does. And, you know, this is, again, an homage to stunt work and stunt film, but it's also trying to be an action movie and a thriller and a comedy and a romance.
Yes, I have a couple notes on that for sure.
It's like threading this needle that is wild. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it would be hard to capture all of that in a longer summary, I feel like, anyway. Right. But before we get into all the spoilers and all the things, what is your rating on this one?
So I've only seen it once, and I do think it's a little slow to get started, the first 20 to 30 minutes. And part of me felt like it almost rushed a little bit. It throws you right into a situation and sort of skips around through time and sets everything up. But the first 20 minutes or so, I felt like it was a little too, not on the nose, but not anything original. But then as it went on longer, I found myself enjoying it more and more. So I think by the end, I was like, okay, well, that was fun. I don't think I'm going to watch it again, but I'd probably align closer to the IMDb rating. Like, I'd give it a 7, enjoyable action film.
Wowzers. This is going to be an interesting one for us.
Are you
going
to give it a 10?
I was pretty close to giving it a 10.
Like just as good as The Sandlot.
I mean, I was going to give it like a 9, 9.5.
Okay.
Yeah, I love this movie. And like, I... not to start off fighting, but I totally disagreed with what you just said about the beginning not being original. I was like, this is so original. Anyway, so that's funny. This is gonna make for an interesting episode. Okay, well, like we said, I mean, either way, either rating is a go watch it, have a good time rating. So if you haven't seen it yet, please pause, go watch it. But if you have, you know, join us as we continue on to the spoiler zone. So as we like to say here on the pod, turn around, don't drown. It's spoiler time.
Here we go.
So first thing I have to call out off the top is that this soundtrack is fire. The way it opens, this cover of Kiss, and I just was immediately in the zone for me personally. I was like, this is a great time. I'm having a great time already. It just started and I'm already having a great time. So I really like the opening stunt sequence where you're getting this, you know, you go right into this story. I felt like that's the part where that kind of confuses me, because I feel like you get dropped right into this narration from Ryan Gosling's character setting the scene for this whole thing of like, he's a stunt guy and his name's Colt Seavers and he is a stunt double for Tom Ryder. And I liked the meta-ness of it all, where this is kind of a pun on Tom Cruise, in case people didn't really get that. And it's action film. He's like, why am I telling you who Tom Ryder is? You know who Tom Ryder is, you know? And it's very like, feels like he's talking to you, but he's giving you the lay of the land.
Which is ironic, because Tom Cruise does like all his own stunts.
He does.
But I do like the play on the name too, Ryder and Cruise. Yeah.
Well, and I think that's why they, you know, they reference him later as well, but actual Tom Cruise. So he does do most of his own stunts. He injures himself aggressively on sets. Anyway. But I like that they're walking us through the set, you know, like to begin with. And it feels very authentic. And if you read up on this film, it is like, this is the setup. This is the actual stunt crew that is on screen, hooking him into the rig. The director is there on screen. He makes a cameo of like, I guess we're going again. So it feels very authentic to me. And they shoot it in a one-er. It's like a almost 4-minute one-er.
Yeah, I enjoyed that.
And I loved how it was shot. I also loved the building that it was shot in. It just looks cool. You have all this glass and this cool angles. I felt like the location was chosen really well. And I liked that they're setting the stage for Jody and Colt having this real chemistry and, you know, joking and chatting the whole way through that shot, I thought was really cool. And he does not do all his own stunts on this film. That's the literal fucking point of this movie. But he does do this stunt. He does do this
despite jump. Being afraid of heights, which I didn't know about Ryan Gosling. He's afraid of heights in real life.
And he kept saying that he was like trying to get out of it multiple times.
Oh,
he was
really?
Like, I really don't want to read that. That's funny. He was like, I really didn't want to do it. And I tried to come out of it. But his thought process was, I needed to do a few things on this film, not to take away from the stunt guys, but to be able to tap into even just a modicum of what they experience doing these stunts every time. You know, and he's like, you will have to be able to relate to the risks that they're taking and the fear that they feel and all these things. So he felt like it was an important part of the role.
And I think that also goes a long way for me as far as Ryan Gosling. I'm going to keep saying Ryan Reynolds just like you today. Like, I'm going to mix up Ryan Reynolds and Ryan Gosling.
They're both Canadian exports. You know,
and
like,
we're
doing
the movies back to back. So I just watched Deadpool and Wolverine
Ryan. Ryan. It's
so Ryan, in my head, I was like, that goes a long way to know that he did that, because I feel like this suffered a little bit from the Barbie mentality where they had it called out by the narrator in Barbie of, hey, if you want to express the every woman look, Margot Robbie is not the right
person.
About Ryan Gosling. I'm like, so he's playing a stuntman who's quote unquote not attractive enough to be on. Like, nobody wants to see your face. And I get that that's sort of a meta joke. Like, people don't
like,
want to see your face. They want to see Aaron Taylor Johnson's. And I'm like,
listen, Aaron Taylor Johnson also has a beautiful face.
So it is cool that he did a few of his own stunts in here to sort of get some of that cred back and buy into the role.
Yeah. And I, like you said, I think it speaks to informing his performance more than anything. Cause as he said, he didn't want to do it. It's not like he was signing up to do it. He's not a Tom Ryder who's like, I do all my own stunts. He's like, I just felt like I needed to do some of this to get into character. And it makes sense because, again, you hear his stunt double, his primary, he has a couple, but his stunt double in this film, who does a lot of the big stunts, is Logan Holiday. And if you listen to him being interviewed, he is like, it's not like it's not scary. It's scary every time. It's, you are scared, but you have to trust your team and trust your crew and get into the zone. And, you know, it is an adrenaline, but it is still scary. So I think, and Ryan's like, yeah, it is. He said he put the sunglasses on to hide his fear. He was like, there was no actual reason that I needed sunglasses in that shot. And I put them on to hide my fear.
Well, there's that, like, what's that quote of, courage is not bravery in the absence of fear. It's bravery.
It's doing it in the face of fear.
Yes. Yeah. So there's a little inspiration for you on the pod today, everybody. Go out there and do your best. Plus, you got Hannah Waddingham. So I did want to call out, though, the first
the two most
minutes.
Inspirational things we can provide, Hannah Waddingham and a quote. I love it.
A lot of inspiration in this one. But I wanted to say that I didn't like the pace that the first, like I said, 15, 20 minutes ran. I don't like that it goes immediately from, here's the situation, I'm going to narrate this whole thing. Oh, I got injured. Then we jump to him in depression for 2.5 minutes where he's really sad. And then it just goes back to now he's on the set and he's going to try and fall in love with this girl again. Like, it moves really quick for a movie that's over 2 hours long. It feels like they could have cut some stuff to get this a little shorter and a little more concise for an action film. But that being said, I'm a sucker for a long buildup prior to an opening credits. So I like how you don't get the title screen and the credits until 15 minutes or so in. Like, The Departed might be my favorite movie of all time. And that's my favorite opening. Like, we're not even going to get to the credits until 20 minutes into the film. So I dug that here.
Yeah, I actually liked the pacing. I don't know that they do a great job of explaining how long it's been, I will say. Because to your point, he has this period of depression that is clearly, you know, it's been a while, but it's presented as a couple minutes. And it is actually, I think I read it was supposed to be 18 months later. So it's been quite a while, enough time for Jody to have done a couple of projects, you know, between being a camera operator and becoming
quote,
a director
unquote,
of
projects. Her revenge body.
Her revenge body. Oh my God, I love that. So she's had time to do some other work and, you know, things like that. But I like that they show him kind of out of it, actually. Like, it clearly was physically extremely traumatic. I mean, he broke his back, basically. So they don't. I liked that they didn't make us sit through that process too long, because I actually thought that would bring the comedy of the movie down, you know, obviously, of seeing him in a hospital bed, right? You see him on the end of recovery and he still has pain and things that he's doing to take care of his body. And he's developed a real fear about what his career was, right? Of like, I fucked up. I'm clearly not as good as this as I thought, so I shouldn't be doing it. And I think that they add this humor in of now he's a valet. Like, of all the things that he could be doing, he's a valet to the stars at this Mexican restaurant in LA, which was filmed at the El Coyote, which is a well-known Mexican place that a lot of actors have gone. And so I just think that's like a funny add-on rather than making it feel like a wallow, you know? And it feels like something that his character would do, not be self-pitying, but like, I'm gonna move on, and I have humility too. Like, I don't give a shit, I'll go be a valet, you know what I mean? I kind of liked that about his character, at least.
I think it's a little, it's not quite exposition, but I don't like how quickly we go through. Like you said, it is 18 months, but it's in the span of 2 minutes. It's like, yeah, I went
it
into
doesn't
depression
tell you
and
that
I haven't
clearly,
talked to
yeah.
you and I haven't talked to her, but now she wants me on her movie, so now I'm healed, I'm ready to do stunts again. It just,
yeah,
I think they could have told that part of the story in a more coherent way without it feeling not unearned, but so rapid.
Yeah, I do think it feels rapid. I'll agree with that. I do think the thing with the movie is that from the emotional perspective of him and Jody, I think it's more him realizing he thinks that ship has sailed, and he explains it later. I like the way he says it later, because I think everyone can relate to this feeling of, you know, you need to say something to somebody about something, whatever it is. Something's happened. You've had a fight, you didn't say something. And then you're trying to figure out the exact right thing to say, and you let it go too long. And then it's too late to say something, you know, it feels too late to say something. And I think that's a very human experience to have that moment and not know what to do with it and feel like that has just slipped through my fingers. There's nothing I can do about it now, you know? And this call from this producer to bring her on this film, it feels like a light at the end of the tunnel, I think, for him, of like, okay, I'm going to get the chance now. There's a reason for me to talk to her. I can try to explain. And of course, because he's a dude, he doesn't immediately come in and explain, because of course, but he I think that's the way he's thinking of it, of like, okay, I have a chance. I have a chance again. I'll do anything to get this chance with her again because I fucked it up last time.
That's fair. And I think maybe because this was my first watch, knowing how it plays out, because I think 40 minutes into the movie, I went, well, clearly Gale is evil, right? Are we just not all already aware of this? Like, she's the one who's orchestrating this whole thing. So knowing that, maybe that beginning part doesn't seem so simple because it is part of the scheme
this whole
to
thing,
make him be the fall guy.
Which I love that. I mean, plus one, first of all, on Gale being evil. I feel like the second I saw her, I was like, she's going to be bad. You know what I mean? Like, she's going to be a bad person. I love that his explanation, or his description of her rather, where he's like, the woman freebasing Diet Coke is Gale, Tom Ryder's producer. And she's like chewing gum and freebasing Diet Coke. And I'm like, who is this sociopath? Like, this person is obviously a bad person because she can do both of those things at the same time. But yeah, I totally agree with that. I will also say, I think like it helps you tee up the rest of this. Like you said, you're going to go into this crazy scheme of the fall guy meaning so many things in this film. You know, it's not just, that is a stunt term in case you didn't know. This is what they call the stunt guys on films. They have for ages, but it's also in this case, a fall guy for this crime, a fall guy, and that he's fallen in love with this director. This is the way that the director
That's probably why there's 8 different fucking movies with the name Fall Guy, because it means so many.
Because it can just mean so many things. Exactly. I guess so. Maybe so. But anyway, all that to say, he hops on the plane. He's like, fuck it, I'm going. And I love the like, wake me for meals little thing that he sticks in his
I think I'm
going to
steal that. That's so
me
smart.
Too. I was
don't
totally
disturb
like,
me unless there's food.
If there, I don't want to miss the food. For sure, I don't want to miss the food, but I'm also going to crash out. So, like, yeah, wake me for meals. I thought that was hilarious.
I love it when he gets to the set. There's that initial car chase scene and then the discovery that it's him. But I love when she's making him do the same stunt, like, time and time again to teach. And she's on the bullhorn and they're having this super awkward,
this
I think that's
when
I got
awkward
invested.
Emotional conversation.
That's the moment of the movie that I got. I was like, okay, I wrote down, that's the first time I laughed out loud during the film, because I did love that. I loved the random alien dude giving his 2 cents. I loved when Ryan Gosling first goes to speak, but he hits the buzzer instead. Underrated laugh in the film. But that scene got me invested.
I love that whole sequence when he gets on the Australia set. I mean, I love that he's in a Nomex and he's like, I don't know why I'm in this. This is gear that's for a hardcore stunt, just for context. And he's like, I don't think I need to be in this. And he's like, you can tell he's nervous about getting back to this job and is trying to find a way out of it. He's on the constant hunt for coffee, the poor man, and no one will get this fucking guy a cup of coffee.
Five times he can't get coffee.
And I have in my notes in all caps, get him some fucking coffee, somebody.
And we've all been there. At least I know you and I have.
Oh, for
just,
sure.
If I don't get coffee right now, I'm going to strangle somebody. So I can't imagine getting off a flight like that and not getting caffeine in my system.
100%. And then he stays up throughout the film. So it's, again, it's a running joke that he's just fucking exhausted this whole time. I also like that he asked them to turn him into Tom Cruise, which is funny. but then, yeah, I love that emotional, basically group therapy session over the bullhorn. And that she basically is like, I can't hear him. Can you get him a bullhorn? So then he has to yell back at her. And she just keeps setting him on fire and throwing him into a wall. And if that's not revenge on your ex in the most satisfying way, I don't know what is. I'm like, every woman should have this opportunity at some point.
Yeah, the movie does a lot of things well. You know, despite giving it a 7 rating, I do like some of the, I like how they consistently throughout the film, they latch onto that metaphor of the characters in the movie she's making as a metaphor for their relationship, and they're talking it through, and they're doing a terrible job of masking that they're talking about the characters and not themselves. Just
but I think that's
laundry.
The point. You know what I mean? I think that is very intentional here to be such a meta type of film and to align this story to this other story of Metal Storm, which is, by the way, a movie that did also exist. And this is supposed to be a reboot of this terrible sci-fi, like wannabe Star Wars. Oh. So it's just, there's so many references in here, so many homages to the film
industry.
That was going
to be my question, was, is this too inside baseball at times? Because I wrote that in the first 5 or 6 minutes of, they're using a lot of industry terms. They're making references. I didn't know that was the director. Like, you're saying, oh, this is the actual crew and this is the actual, which I think is cool. You mentioned the stunt equipment's name, but somebody who's not looking up this information doesn't know that. So they're not getting that enjoyment out of it. Like, do you think this is at times too inside baseball?
No, I don't think so, because I enjoyed it on the first watch, and some of that I knew, yes, but not all of it. You know, I had a really good time on the first watch, and I think it was just enjoyable and funny. Like, I LOL'd in the theater, you know what I mean? And so, and I mean, I knew about Nomex already, but I didn't know that was the director. I had a feeling, though. I didn't know who it was, but I will say I had a feeling looking at him. I was like, this is a cameo. Like, I could feel the cameo of it all.
I didn't know if it would be kind of like watching Scream without being a horror movie buff. Like, if you're missing out on all the meta references and the movies that it's paying homage to, would you enjoy it as much?
Maybe not, because, again, I didn't know every single reference, but I do feel like I caught a lot of homage to the film industry type of references. So maybe that does make a difference. I do think in and of itself, it's just like a funny story and it's well performed. So,
and I guess
maybe,
if I'm playing,
maybe
my
don't catch
own,
everything.
If I'm playing my own devil's advocate here, the people that are going to see an action movie have probably seen other action movies. So
right.
it's, even if it is a little, you're not going to see Scream if you're not a horror movie fan, most likely. You're not going to see this
likely.
If you're not an action movie fan. So
100%.
Lamar's
and
an
nothing,
idiot. End of story.
Lamar's an idiot. No, I'm just kidding. Lamar's not an idiot. But I will say, yes, you probably enjoy the stunts, especially no matter what. You know right. what I mean? Like, you love an action flick, and there's some cool stunts that we just like open with. And I love that as soon as he gets onto set, he's like, a cannon roll? Like, the first thing I'm going to do is a fucking cannon roll, which, fun fact, does involve a literal cannon. I don't know if you know this. They shoot a cannon to the bottom of the car to propel the roll. And now
there's got to be a better way to do that.
Well, they have upgraded it. So fun fact, it is hydraulics and air pressure that power the cannon now versus before it used to be, wait for it, black powder in a log. So like, it has gotten better.
These poor stuntmen.
These horse stomach. But so I did do a deep dive on all this because I fucking loved it. But I loved two things about this scene. So I love the line, Winston Duke's character's line, where he's like, it's time for you to start rolling cars again instead of parking them. And I just thought that was so funny. And the first thing he gets him to do is do this cannon roll, which, if you didn't know, is a record-setting cannon roll IRL. This is a Guinness Book of World Records record-setting cannon roll with 8.5 rolls. And it was done on a second take with they only had two cars to do this. And the stunt team asked to take it again. They were like, I think we can do this, because the first roll was end over end rather than on the side, the way that it ended up. And it was three rolls end over end. And it still looked pretty cool. But the guys were like, I think we can do it. I think I have figured it out. And he holds the turn just 1 second longer, he said, before hitting the cannon. And that made all the difference. And it was 8.5 rolls. And the thumb you see stick out is his thumb, Logan Holliday's thumb. And then they reshoot it. And he's the guy who straps Ryan Gosling in and pulls him out and pats him on the back for the stunt. And Ryan Gosling was like, I feel so weird. You're literally patting me on the back for the stunt you just did.
That is, I wonder, do you think you know when you're in the stunt car? Oh, that was 8.5. I did it. Or do you think you're just going so fast you have no fucking idea?
He had no idea. He actually said that. He was like, I knew it was a lot of rolls, but I didn't know how many rolls it was. And they told him, and everybody was like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, I broke a record. But they were just waiting for his thumb to come out. And he was like, it's good. And everybody was like,
I like how they sort of worked it into, the dialogue of the film too. And I didn't realize that until the very end. I think they show it in the closing credits as well. So they make a point to say like, this is a big, it's cool that we're making a movie about stunts.
Yeah.
And we broke a fucking record about stunts. I wanted to jump to, if we can, the fight scene in the nightclub, the blacklight scene.
So fun.
That was when this went from being a movie about action movies to being an action movie. And I thought that, again, there are moments in the film where, okay, the beginning, slow to hook me, the comedy scene with the bullhorn gets me on board. And then this scene is where I was like, okay, I'm all in, because
it's
I loved that
now.
Scene. It does the drug trippy and the lights and everything going crazy. I love the way they work in the practical effects with the special visual effects. But I really dug that. And just the look of the whole thing with him in like
the look of it. Yeah.
White or yellow suit in the black light. Very cool.
Oh yeah. I think that's shot so well. So cool. It's a fun fight scene. It feels, realistic, even though he's not like an action star, right? He's a stunt guy, but he's not a fighter per se, but I love that he's just so capable of holding his own in this situation. And it feels, again, it feels realistic. And I just love that he's fucking tripping balls and he just like hangs in, man. He just powers through. And I just think that's half the comedy, because he's like, I am. And he like his thing to it that he interrogates this guy about is like, how long is this going to last? You know, like, I need you to tell me how long this is going to last. He's like, when you stop seeing unicorns and there's the unicorn.
I love the unicorn callback throughout. The post-it note of like, get unicorn food or whatever.
Yeah.
To show that Tom is also tripping on this stuff. I also liked the drug dealer's quote where he's trying to get in, get his information and leave. Ryan Gosling is. And he's like, how come nobody ever wants to talk to the drug dealers? And he's like, his feelings are very hurt by that, of like, you don't really sit down and talk to your weed man. You don't.
Because he's like sitting in the corner by himself. Nobody's hanging with him, that's for sure. And he's super sad about it. Poor guy. You know, he's like, I don't have time to hang. I think the thing about Colt, too, is that he feels like somebody who would hang and talk with him if he wasn't on this mission. You know what I mean? But I do agree with you. I think that is, it does kind of shift into an action-y film. And I think this is where you can point out that the story takes a turn. Again, it's trying to thread this needle of doing all these things in one film, which I think it does quite well, but it's trying to do a lot of things in one film, including we're now trying to figure out where the fuck Tom Ryder is, and he's on this mission to find him, and he's pretending to be Tom Ryder, and he's finding out all this weird shit in this process. And my favorites are like, he's talking to Gale throughout, and he's just the way he says Gale, he's like, you told me to do this, Gale, you made me do this, and now I have a dead body on my hands, and I'm fighting drug dealers, and I'm seeing unicorns, and he's just cracking while also kind of keeping his cool. It's a really interesting, I think, balance that he strikes, like, in the performance itself.
Agreed. It reminds me a lot of Robert Downey Jr. in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, if anyone hasn't seen one.
Yes.
It's by the same director and writer as The Nice Guys, which we already talked about, but it also walks a line of, it's kind of a murder mystery, and it's kind of an action movie, and it's kind of a rom-com, and it's very self-aware, and there's these very hard right jokes where they sort of take what you think is going to happen and go right off the wall with it. So if you liked this one, I'd say go check out Kiss Kiss Bang Bang as well.
For sure. I also really like, you mentioned something earlier I want to touch on, of them working in parallel emotional storyline to Jody and Colt, as well as this Metal Storm plotline. And I love that she calls him while he's tripping balls this whole time.
Yeah.
And he, one, answers the phone. First of all, getting a man to answer the phone is a pain in the fucking ass to begin with. But he is like, you know what? I am high as shit and I am going to answer this call, which I think speaks to how much he loves her to begin with. Two, he pauses what he's doing mid-murder mystery to talk about this script. He's like, yeah, let's figure it out. Let's workshop this shit. And I just love the way that whole scene, it's just funny, but I love the whole way the scene is shot, like, and they talk you through the split screen and they're like being very meta about it. But I like how it's shot. I like that she gets the like alien claw on her face.
It's a very serious conversation, but she's got the alien hand.
But she's got the alien claw like this while she's being very serious. I love that whole scene. I think it's so funny. I think it's so cute. And it's a pause from the action, but it doesn't take you out of the action, if that makes sense, because he's in the middle of doing this whole thing. And I think it's really well done.
Yeah, I think after that, because we talked about the fight scene at the bar, and then this is sort of our last moment of where it's quiet and we get the dead body reveal, which I thought that would be near the end of the movie. I was like, okay, so we know the dead body's here. We're about to find out that Gale is evil, because obviously she is. And I thought maybe there'd be 20, 30 minutes left. There's still 50 minutes left.
Yeah.
So from there,
a lot happens.
We move into like these subsequent, it just feels like set pieces of, okay, now we're going to do the boat chase, and now we're going to do this car in the back of this giant garbage truck or whatever it is chase. Yeah. And then we're going to do this hand-to-hand combat in the apartment, and then we're going to have a gunfight out. It's just, it goes boom, 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 like six different action sequences in a row.
So
I'm not complaining,
cool.
But each one, it feels, this is where we get to. This is an homage to every action movie ever, because we need something for everyone.
And I love it. It is. It's such a fun homage of like scene, scene, scene. There's these very small breaks of like, again, they're in the apartment having the argument about who's going to take the gun, who's going to take this, like who's going to take the axe, you know? And then they have the talk. He talks to her assistant and meets the dog, who, by the way, is a stunt dog. Her name is Charade, for the record. And she did all of her own stunts.
Great job, Charade.
great job, Charade.
If they ever make the long-awaited Oscar for stunt people, Charade should be the first winner. It should be the first one.
Yeah. I agree, 100%. And then they have these pauses in between where he's like, they get their romantic montage, which I think is hilarious that their romantic montage is them shooting Metal Storm at the Opera House. And I think that's such a shifted take on the romantic montage of they have this great day together, but they're shooting this action film together.
Yeah.
And then he wants to go to karaoke. And I literally thought of you because he is like fighting all day. He has this whole thing that he has to deal with. He's fighting the bins. He has the bin drag him across the Sydney Bridge, which by the way is Ryan Gosling getting dragged across the Sydney Bridge. That was another one of his stunts. Huh. But he's fighting all day to get to karaoke with Jody.
That's my life in a nutshell.
And I was like, Lamar getting like just fighting through his day to get to karaoke. It feels like something you would do is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would
run through a fucking wall to get to karaoke. Like, yeah.
I do. I think it's so fun. It's just such a fun set of sequences. And it's just full of great stunts and homages again. They referenced the Miami Vice stunt show, which was a real thing.
I remember at Six Flags in New Jersey, it must have been the same exact fucking thing, but it was called the Lethal Weapon stunt show. But they did the same exact boat chase,
same concept. Stunt.
I was like, is this just, they just changed the name maybe? I don't know.
Yeah.
I have to contact Six Flags.
But yeah, check with them. They need to explain themselves. Is it copyright infringement? I want to know. Yeah. But yeah, I think it's all these great sequences. And again, all these callbacks, they come back to it later. Yes. Like he does the jump later, but I think crux of the matter, he does run into Aaron Taylor Johnson's Tom Ryder. And that showdown is such a funny scene to me. I just think it's so cool. That whole dialogue of him basically owning his crazy that he did do this murder and I'm going to need the evidence. Thank you so much. And I love the fire shot. Like that he's like getting it, they're pouring the gas on him. They're going to pull this shit. And he's like, okay, like fine. And just blows him with fire. And I just think it makes him seem, not only is this fun action sequence, but it makes him like seem smart and resourceful. And he's just not giving up.
I love the shot. I love the thought of him like screaming on purpose to get the gas in his mouth. I'm like, okay, very strategic. Good move.
Yep.
I hate the fact that he's coated in gasoline and blowing fire from his mouth because that would just set him on fire. I hate the practical scientific matter that he would be on fire too. I've seen enough YouTube videos of people accidentally starting fires and it coming back to the gas can to know that that's how gasoline works. So that
it's
going to
follow the whole thread for sure. Yeah. But I feel like you have to watch this for what it is another thing. I had this whole argument with somebody the other day of you have to go into it knowing that it's going to be this type of movie, right? It's not going to be perfect. But it's still, they still have to design it in a way that it works, which I think is cool. Again, when you're trying to be meta about this film, they have to design this shot in a way that works, where it's not dangerous, where it does get, you know, I think all of that behind it, which is why I spent hours going down a stunt rabbit hole, is really fun and cool about this movie. And they just keep it up all the way to the end.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say you have to know what it is and be okay with total suspension of disbelief in some cases. And I think there's only a couple cases of that in this. For the most part, it does land for me. But I would just, if anybody loves this but is criticizing 80s and 90s action movies where
it's super
over the top, I'm like, dude, this is the same thing. It's done a little better.
Same shit. Yeah, it's upgraded. It's totally the same thing. It's just an updated version of that. And I think you just accept it for what it is, which, I mean, I guess I do. I was trying to think about this. I was like, do I just love action movies? I kind of do really like action movies. And I think that's weird. Probably most people would think that was weird coming from me because I watch a lot of like film and I'm very much a cinephile in a lot of ways. But like, fuck it. An action movie is fun.
Sometimes you want to watch a film and sometimes you want to watch a movie.
Right. You know? This is a movie, you know, but it is a movie that I think has little tendrils of being a film because of all the references and all the homages. And I think, I just think it makes it really
fun. It's been a while since you used the word tendrils on the pod. It's been about 6 months. You used to use tendrils all the time in the early eps.
You know what? You made me feel so self-conscious about it. I must have trimmed the fat, but it's back, bitches. Tendrils.
Yeah. There's there's a couple spots because I feel like whenever I give a lower rating than you or vice versa, you feel the need to kind of justify. And I did have a good time watching this. There were a couple things that stood out to me, the gasoline thing being one. I didn't like that right after that, they're chasing him and on his tail and suddenly he's in like a docking area and hidden. And I'm like, when did that happen? He just sort of went from being hot on his tail to now he's hiding and talking on the phone. And there's one other thing, which is the...
Again, with the phone calls. The guys, men don't actually call you this much. Just, ladies...
Nobody talks on the phone anymore,
period.
Let's
set some reasonable expectations. All right, continue.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, the only other thing that I didn't love... I really liked the truck chase for the most part. Yes, it's over the top. I liked the use of the dog. Like, the stunt dog that we already talked about. Of just... It reminded me of... I think John Wick 3 is the one that has the German Shepherds. And I was like, they were so creative about what they did in that movie with using dogs in the action sequences. And I liked the use of the dog in this a lot. But what I didn't like was the like CGI flowers when the truck crashes, I think.
Oh,
such a practical and move homage to all these stuntmen. That CGI effect, I'm okay with it during the drug tripping scene because that's what it's there for. But during this, you couldn't have found a way to practically do that.
Well, they did do that jump, so that is what's weird. I think it's because, and I didn't look into this, but my hypothesis is that they couldn't actually damage those real flowers. And so I think they don't do the jump on that actual flower bed, which is what's in the street.
It's probably like whatever the plant equivalent of PETA is. People for the ethical tree, PETA.
100%. Yeah. I think that's supposed to be what it was. But I think it's just that they had to shoot it somewhere else and maybe the flowers weren't actually there. You know what I mean? Because they
did do the real jump. Yeah, the jump, it wasn't the jump that I thought was fake. I just didn't like these CGI flowers popping up in front of his face. Yeah.
But it was so funny when they were interviewed about that jump. They literally were like, no flowers were harmed in the making of this film. So it was a very PETA type of reference. It was really funny that you said it that way.
That makes me enjoy it more. Okay.
Exactly. But what fun fact about that stunt, because I'm here to bring you all the stunt nuggets today. They do. So his stunt double, Logan Holiday, did that jump, of course. And he went into the science of explaining it, which is they have a jump calculator where they put in the weight of the truck and the dimensions and the height of you and anything in the car, the weight of all that is in there. So they can tell you exactly where you're going to land so the camera can be placed appropriately. So he said, I'm going to land here and the camera is a foot away, and the accuracy of that jump calculator was within a foot. So that's how they got that shot. It was super, super fucking accurate. And he also said that he had to rig the seat. Like, so the way that they have the seat in there is like not a normal seat. They show you the regular seat, but they had to rip it out, put in a racing seat and a bungee system that's super tight bungees that holds him so that he can bounce and not break his spine. You know, not damage his spine in that jump, because you fuck the axle, you fuck everything, and you hit really hard on that jump. And he also said the backup safety system is, I shit you not, empty water bottles across the bottom of the seat, and he popped three of them.
Wow.
Which I just, like, again, I think this is so fucking
cool. But there
weren't
any, like, injuries, like, at least not, like, anything serious on this set. That's...
Because there are these are all fucking tenured professional stunt guys who, like, again, not only have a safety system in place, but have a backup system that's old. The water bottle thing is very old school, he said. But it's a backup, and it helped him in this situation because he bounced off of it. So I just think it's so cool how technical it is. But then also how they're extra safe on top of it, of like, I know exactly where I'm going to land, and I have this bungee system, but I'm, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to like have this backup plan, and I'm going to, you know, do this old school method to make sure that we're super safe. And I just think it speaks to what pros these guys are and were on this film throughout, and did some really cool shit in the process.
And I had read that the reason the Academy was so hesitant to add an Oscar for stunt performers was that they thought that stunt performers would take too many unnecessary risks. Like, they would be too extreme in trying to win an Oscar, that people are going to start, you know, getting more injuries and more deaths and stuff like that, which I thought was like crazy. So it's cool to hear that they are actually doing it. But it's like, well, fucking Daniel Day-Lewis can lock himself in a dark room for 14 days without food and researching a role.
Yeah, Christian Bale gaining and losing 80 pounds every role and like putting his health at risk, and Matthew McConaughey doing that for Dallas Buyers Club and all these things. Like, people take risks for roles, period. Like, just give them the fucking credit they deserve, for sure.
I'm also a little bummed out that, because you told me that they are actually going to start having an Oscar for stunt work. And I'm really bummed, because I feel like if this had been 25 years ago, the Jackass crew would have won so many Oscars by this point.
Yeah, the Jackass crew is wild. I don't know that they were professionals in the same way, so maybe not. But yeah, they're wild.
Oscar winner, Bam Oscar. Margera.
Oh my God. No, hard no. I'm going to not vote for that. But I will say again, if there is ever an Oscar worthy film for stunt work, this is definitely
right.
one of them. They do some really cool stuff. And I do like, just taking us home, you know, the final stunt is this jump, and this is how they're going to make Tom Ryder confess. They get him mic'd up and they just thrust this last stunt on him mid-production, and they make it where he's in the car with him. Colt is in the car with him and forcing him to confess, and he's driving him off this jump, and clearly Colt does all of his stunts for him, so he's fine. But Tom is like, what are we doing? You know, he's freaking out, and his whole shtick is he tells everybody he does his own stunts and he's losing his mind. So you get to see him kind of lose his mind, which is fun. And then he confesses, which is cool. But then you proceed to see, again, just a series of really cool stunts. The yeah. jump, the fight between the stunt crew and the bad guys. And I just think it's like one fun thing after another, culminating in this fall out of the helicopter, which is so fun, which is they did do for real in this film, and is something that hasn't been done in quite some time because of CGI and the ability to like just not do these falls. They haven't had to, but they did it for real in this one, and they haven't done it in years, and it was really cool.
I agree that it's super cool, and I'm very glad that they included all the behind the scenes shots of the different stunts in the closing credits, because
yeah.
to your point, it is a bummer that I've become so desensitized to cool stunts, because a lot of times you assume it's all CGI at this point, when you could make
yeah.
an entire Marvel film, not calling them out specifically, but when you could film an entire thing on green screen and basically do whatever you want, it's not as impressive anymore. So when I saw the original jump in this film, I assumed it was fake, honestly. And then when I saw it in the closing credit, I think Janelle and I both went, oh, they actually did that. That's cool.
No, they did it for real.
But it's a bummer to think that we're sort of desensitized to that at this point.
And I think the stunt guys, I think part of the story, right, is that nothing replaces the authenticity of really doing it. Yeah. And I think that's why they wanted to make this film the way that they did, of we can do these stunts. Like, we can do this for real. Trust us to do it. And they did. And they did it without injuries. And I think it's just a really cool way to take us home with this really awesome stunt that, again, is an homage to even the title, The Fall Guy, his last big fall. And it's shot so well.
Did you do the Leonardo DiCaprio, like, pointing at the screen when he was falling? And you were like, what's happening?
The fall guy. There it is. There it is. I should have. I have watched it 3 times. Maybe I did. I don't remember. But yeah, it's a really good time. If you can't tell, I've been evangelizing this film to as many people as I can, because I just think it's a really fun, kind of different action movie in that. Yeah. yeah, there's so few CGIs. Other than flowers, which is hilarious. There's so few CGI moments. It's like them really doing the work. And Ryan Gosling, again, getting into the thick of it on a few of these, which I don't think anybody expects him to do. I think it's cool that he did to get into character, though. So,
Do you think there were more actual uses of CGI in this, or do you think there were more shots of dogs biting nuts? Because that seemed to never get old in this. There's like 4 different times where the dog bites.
That's
got to
be
nuts.
For real, right? They just put a little like a cushion in there. I think that one's for real. Let Sheree do her job. You know, that's what she's here for.
She's good at what she does. Business is booming.
100%. So anyway, I think this story has a happy ending, right? Jody and him get back together. She helps him redeem his name, and stunt glory ensues in the process. And yeah, I just think it was a good time overall.
Yeah, I think after discussing it, I'm not going to change my initial rating. I stand by my 7, because I still do think for 2 hours and 5, they could have cut probably 20 minutes into the buildup. But I will say, I will take back one thing I said in the opening, and that is that I won't rewatch this, because maybe I will give it another shot and watch it yeah. with all the things we've talked about in mind. And I think I will enjoy it more the second time around.
And I think that's fair for a lot of movies, right? Like, it, sometimes it does take a couple watches to really enjoy it. Again, I personally enjoyed it on the first watch. I had a great time on the first watch, which is why I rewatched it. But I think it's okay to say, like, I need to watch something again to really appreciate mm-hmm. all of it. And I do think this is one of those films where when you get into the weeds of how it was made and you research it a little, it is so much more enjoyable. It's just, it is a good time, because you're like, I now understand all the work that really went into this. And I also think that's just what filmmakers want you to understand, regardless of if it's a stunt crew or just a film crew that does, you know, who cares if it's a rom-com or an action flick or whatever. They just want you to understand how much work went into it.
It's kind
of
like
intentionality is in it.
It's kind of like Tommy Wiseau's The Room. Like, you really can't appreciate The Room until you've read The Disaster Artist, which I'm reading. Have you ever read The Disaster Artist?
I have not read it. But did you see
the James Franco movie, though? The adaptation that he did?
Yeah.
So, yeah, the book is even more. It's just, this movie was a fucking mess. We should do that one day, because the things this guy did as a director, I think.
I just watched The Disaster Artist. I never saw The Room because, yeah, all the things. But, I mean, yeah, it's one of those.
Oh, my God. Okay. We're definitely, if we ever do Bad Movie Month, The Room is top of the list. It's
okay,
so
we can't
bad.
Do a month of bad movies. I'll go crazy, but we can pepper them in. We can pepper them in for sure. But yeah. Anyway, thank you for going on this ride with us and with me. I geeked out, obviously. I had a great time with this movie, and I think it's so on brand for the month of blockbustery vibes. Like, I think it's definitely a summer blockbuster.
And it, like, kicked
vibe.
Off the summer too. It was back in what, May or April? Like, it was the first one, I think.
I think so. So it was appropriate to start with. That being said, come back next week to join us for possibly the movie of the summer. You have all probably seen it by now based on box office ranking in those dollars. But Deadpool and Wolverine is coming up next week. So,
where we will continue mixing up Ryan Gosling and Ryan Reynolds.
For real. Again, both Canadian export Ryans. What do you want from me? I can't get it right. There's nothing I can do. You know,
they should just do the Dragon Ball Z thing and merge into one person and just put them in every movie. You get two salaries.
We'll let them know. We'll give them that suggestion. But yeah, come back next week for that one. And in the meantime,
follow us on our socials, all that good stuff. We drink and we watch things. We are finally active on TikTok.
Yeah,
so if you're
we
one of those
did it.
Youngsters who's not turning 40 like me, drink. It's my birthday.
Drink. It's his birthday. But also, let us know if you're actually on TikTok. Do we have a Gen Zer? I want to know. I want to know if we have a Gen Z follower.
I'm curious, but so we're on there. It's going to be a lot of the same content as Instagram, honestly. So if you're already on there, but follow us both, we don't care. And make sure to give us a review on whatever platform or platforms you tend to listen to podcasts. We would appreciate it if it's as high as possible, or Mackenzie will find you
and make you into a speed bump. If you haven't listened to, I Know What You Did Last Summer, you'll learn, you'll get that. But anyway, for now, go have a drink and watch a thing. Cheers.
Cheers. We move into, like, these subsequent, it just feels like set pieces of, okay, now we're going to do the boat chase. Now we're going to do, I'm going to say that again, Mark. Now we're going to do the boat chase. I don't want to say boat cheese, Mark. Now we're going to do the boat. Boat cheese.
I love that you wanted to retake it, but then you had to explain it mid-retake. Yes. You're like, wait, it's because of the cheese. I don't want to say cheese.
Woo, so, okay. Continue. Final mark.